the dark hours dragged by. As color began to show in the east, Handy pulled back farther, knowing Mrs. Bannister would see him if she happened to look behind her. A while after sunup, the buggy stopped at a small creek. Handy pulled in amid some live oak trees to hide. He watched the driver dismount, stretch, and remove a bundle from behind the seat. His jaw dropped. This was not Geneva Bannister. This was a man, short, heavy-set, and he was alone. The grocer.
I'll be damned.
Handy felt a flush of anger, first at the people who had fooled him, then at himself for allowing them to do it. He realized that Addison Giles had been a decoy, luring him away so Geneva Bannister could make her escape in some other direction. And he never got close enough to see the difference. When his initial anger cooled, he rode toward the buggy. He saw no reason to conceal himself. The grocer smiled as Andy approached him.
Welcome. I was just about to fix me some breakfast. Would you join me?
I'd rather jail you.
For what? Can't a man take Sunday off and go fishing?
Sunday or not, what are you doing with Mrs. Bannister's buggy?
Well, she was kind enough to lend it to me. I promised I'd bring her some fish.
Andy looked in the buggy.
Where's your fishing pole?
Oh, by George, I forgot to bring it.
Andy gradually saw humor in the situation, though it was painful.
Looks to me like you caught the fish you were really after.
One of them. The others are coming behind you.
Turning, Andy saw three Slocum brothers and Willie Peg pushing their horses into a long trot. Finnis Slocum's face was contorted with anger as he reined up just short of the buggy.
Smart son of a bitch, ain't you?
The grocer didn't change expression.
Smarter than some.
Finnis's gaze searched in all directions.
Where's she at?
There's just me and the ranger here.
Finnis cast a smoldering gaze at Giles, then concentrated on Andy.
Couple of smart-ass polecats, aren't you? You ain't as damn smart as you think you are. We'll find her yet, and then we'll find him. As for you sons of bitches, people that poke their noses in other people's business sometimes get their noses broke.
He jerked his head toward his brothers.
Come on, we've been dealt one off the bottom.
The three Slocums and Peg turned their horses around and started back toward town.
I don't care if every ranger in Texas covers for those Bannisters. I'm getting that son of a bitch, and I'll pay back every other son of a bitch that helped him. They're all gonna pay.
Peg hung back a little, out of the line of fire.
They thought the same as me, that they were following Mrs. Bannister.
No, I believe they were following you. They thought you were following Geneva. Help me get a fire started and we'll fix some breakfast. Unless you lost your appetite.
Nothing wrong with my appetite, just lost a bit of my reputation.
He gathered wood while Giles sliced bacon from a slab and placed it in a skillet, then poured ground coffee into a pot.
I don't get to enjoy this outdoor life near often enough. I tell you, running a store sure ties a man down.
Andy had made many a meal on an outdoor fire and missed many a meal for lack of the fixings. He saw no romance in it.
I like it better when I can put my legs under a table, especially when my wife does the cooking.
Giles pointed a fork toward the buggy.
Oh, you'll find some tin plates in yonder.
Andy lifted the edge of a tarp. He found a carpet bag and several boxes and bundles. The buggy was too well provisioned for a one-day fishing trip, but he decided against saying anything about it. He sensed that all was not as Giles claimed it to be. He saw a saddle, a blanket, and a bridle beneath the tarp. Surely Giles didn't plan to ride off on the buggy horse. Afraid his face might betray what he was thinking, he stayed turned away for a long moment before turning back to Giles.
I'd like nothing better than to stay with you for the day. I've never done much fishing.
Giles blinked, and for just a moment, Andy saw concern.
But I'd better go back and send a report to my sergeant. I'm afraid I'll get dressed down for letting Mrs. Bannister slip through my fingers.
Giles's look of relief confirmed Andy's suspicion.
Oh, a man shouldn't feel disgraced just because a woman fooled him. Happens all the time. See, my wife, for instance. Well, she's got some crafty ways. I remember this one time... And so there I was, hanging by my fingertips from what was left of the tree limb, with my ladder and my saw on the ground, and nary a soul around to help me.
Andy sipped coffee and ate bacon and cold biscuits, probably leftovers from last night's supper at the Giles house. The grocer talked on a wide range of subjects, business, the weather, politics, but carefully avoided what was foremost on both men's minds.
There's no use putting it off any longer. I'll go in and take my medicine.
Andy pushed to his feet, and Giles extended his hand.
I hope there aren't any hard feelings.
Andy accepted the handshake.
Well, you did what you thought was right, and I did what I was told to.
Andy continued on the trail until a bend took him around a heavy live oak thicket. He worked his way inside it and dismounted, tying the horse. The mule followed as it had been trained to do. Andy moved on foot to the edge of the trees where he had a clear enough view of the creek crossing and Giles's buggy. There he found a seat on a fallen dead limb and waited. Geneva Bannister stood beside her horse at the edge of a live oak clump, watching Addison Giles and the buggy some 300 yards up the creek. She turned to Stableman Spence.
Do you see a sign of anybody else?
Nope. Just Giles waiting where he's supposed to.
We can't be too careful. It's not only the Slocums we have to worry about. There's that man you say is a ranger.
I accused him, and he didn't deny it.
I've known for several days that he was watching me.
But we fooled him. And the Slocums, too.
Geneva was not so certain.
My husband is a horse trader. He says it's always the ones you underestimate that will beat you on a deal. Let's wait a while longer before we ride down there.
The night before, they'd waited in the dark past midnight until both the ranger and the Slocums left town, following the buggy. Then they saddled two horses from the stable and took a roundabout course to reach this rendezvous point. They arrived in time to see first the ranger, then the Slocums ride up to the buggy. The ranger remained longest, but finally turned back toward town.
I'll bet the Slocums were mad enough to bite themselves when they found they'd followed Giles. Yeah, by now they've probably figured out that he baited them to clear the way for you.
I just hope the Slocums don't do him any harm. Addison is one of the kindest men I know.
Oh, don't you worry about him. Even with his gray hair, he can wrestle an ox to the ground. You could worry about me, though.
Spence was spindly and would probably snap in two like a dry stick.
I worry about both of you.
Her concern was genuine. She realized that Giles and Spence were putting themselves at risk by helping her get away. She suspected both were in love with her, or at least felt a physical attraction. Giles was married to a woman who complained a lot. Spence was a bachelor. She suffered pangs of conscience about taking advantage of them, but both offered of their own will. Her eagerness to rejoin Donley overrode her sense of guilt.
I think it's all right to ride down there now.
Yeah, whatever you say.
She sensed reluctance. Spence grabbed at this chance to enjoy her company, offering protection should anything go wrong. Shortly, she would leave him and Giles and go on alone. Giles had a cup of coffee and a broad smile waiting for her as they rode in.
Well, looks like everything worked out. They all probably figured you lit out for Fort Worth and points east.
I hope so.
Well, got some bacon here and a few of last night's biscuits if you'd like to eat before you go on.
I'll eat them while I travel.
Spence quickly removed her side saddle from the horse she'd been riding and stowed it in the buggy. He took out Giles's saddle and put it on the horse. She felt like kissing both men out of gratitude, but feared it might stir up futile feelings that were already too near the surface. Spence's eyes were as sad as if he'd just buried one of his kin.
You're good friends. I can't thank you enough.
Giles helped her up onto the seat.
I promise. Donley and I will be back when the time is right.
I might just shoot them Slocums myself.
She knew he was speaking rashly, in the spirit of the moment. Neither he nor Giles was likely to do anything that extreme, though she suspected the husky Giles would be the wrong man for the Slocums to hem up in a corner. She saw a long stretch of gravel the creek deposited during overflows. She put the buggy on it to minimize tracks. She stayed on the gravel as long as it lasted, a couple of hundred yards, then angled back on the trail. northwestward toward Fort McCavitt, leaving the creek and Junction, Texas, behind. Looking behind her, she saw both men were still watching. Ever since her teens, she had been aware that men were drawn to her, that she could manipulate them with a smile, a half-promise not really meant. At times, that invigorating power served her well, yet it could also bring troublesome consequences when men took it to mean more than she intended. She took pains not to misuse it here, but Giles and Spence needed no persuasion. In fact, Giles came up with this ploy. She thought about the ranger and the embarrassment he must be feeling. He was young and good-looking. For no good reason she could think of, she caught herself wondering if he was married. She quickly curbed the thought. She had a man already. Donley Bannister remained heavy on her mind ever since he left town ahead of the vengeful Slocums. She waited for him to kiss her goodbye. He didn't, and it still stung her. She remembered in the early days of their marriage his passion for her. But with time, his ebbed while hers remained warm. With Donley, the horses came first. They were where his true passion lay. The winding road was by turns rocky and rough, skirting rugged limestone hills, then smoothing a while as it meandered around live oak stands and scattered cedars in the valleys. Now and then, her passing sent deer bounding away, their white tails flashing. She flushed a flock of wild turkeys and soared off into a thicket and settled on the limbs. She met the occasional traveler. She wished she could avoid them, but she knew she would arouse more suspicion by attempting evasion than by simply meeting them head-on. It might strike them as unusual, seeing a woman traveling alone. But by the time they reported it in Junction, she would be miles farther on. Her tracks would be obliterated by the many traveling this way after her. She saw three horsemen coming south along the wagon trail. As they approached, she took them to be cowboys. They were singing, which told her they had probably spent too long in a Fort McCavitt saloon. The singing stopped as the three pulled out of the road and stared. Geneva's heartbeat picked up a little. She looked quickly behind her, hoping some traveler might be coming from that direction to help her in case of trouble. She saw no one. A rifle lay beneath the buggy seat. She resisted an urge to reach down for it. She long recognized the necessity for guns, but had almost rather pick up a snake than handle one. After Donley shot Cletus Slocum, she liked them even less. One of the cowboys removed his hat and made a broad gesture of welcome. He was young, with just a hint of soft whiskers.
Ma'am? Why don't you get down and tarry a spell with us? Better yet, why don't I join you in the buggy? Me and you'll go a ways up the trail together and leave these two drunks behind.
He reached out as if to touch her. One of his companions, suddenly sober, took his arm and pulled him back.
You damn digit. Can't you tell a lady when you see one? This could get you horsewhipped. Even shot.
I was just funning with her.
Ain't nobody laughing.
The sober one touched fingers to the brim of his hat.
Sorry, ma'am. He ain't usually like this. He's just a big old kid, and it's the whiskey talking. If you feel like he's insulted you, we'll take the double of a rope to him. He'll know better next time.
Though Geneva's heart still raced, she gathered her composure.
Never mind. When he's sober, tell him he's lucky my husband didn't see this. You'd be picking him up in pieces.
First water hole we come to, we'll throw him in it. He'll sober up fast.
Well, just don't drown him.
Geneva set the horse into a trot and quickly put the cowboys behind her. Looking back, she could see that the older pair were giving the other a severe talking to. He was taking it with his head down. She realized she had been in no danger, at least not from a single cowboy. Had the other two been equally reckless, she might have had to take up the rifle. She could, even if she didn't like it. She reluctantly learned the use of it as a girl. In fact, Geneva was a crack shot. The incident pointed up the hazards faced by a woman traveling a long distance alone.
Donley better be damned glad to see me.
In point of fact, his letter, written in someone else's hand, indicated where he went, but it warned her not to follow him. She'd decided to do it anyway. The third day, the trail led into the village of Fort McCabot on the San Saba River. Though she wished she could pass through without anyone seeing her, she needed supplies for the trip ahead. From here, she would travel northwestward to Fort Concho, and finally the rolling plains many days farther on. McCabot served as a military post before the war. The original army structures had been converted to civilian use or cannibalized for newer buildings. She was aware that a ranger camp existed near here. She wondered if the ranger who followed her buggy from Junction came from this post. She intended her visit to be short so she could avoid excessive scrutiny. Geneva pulled up in front of a stone building whose sign proclaimed groceries and sundry merchandise. She deflected a curious merchant's questions as she bought enough goods to last several days, about as much as the buggy could carry, then continued on her way, crossing the river at a shallow ford. The San Saba was broad and clear, its banks shaded by towering native pecan trees. She resisted the temptation to stop there and rest. Downriver, the merchant had told her, Spanish padres long ago built a mission, but were slaughtered by hostile Indians, their buildings destroyed. The last Comanche raid tore through this part of the hill country barely more than a decade ago. As a small girl in Erith County, she hid beneath a bed while her mother held a rifle ready in case Indians prowling outside took a notion they wanted more than horses. The memory sent a chill along her back, though she knew she needn't worry about Indians anymore, not here. She always marveled at her mother's courage, wondered if she could match it should the need arise. She had never camped by herself before this trip, but she had no dread of it. Because the cowboys had been a reminder of her vulnerability, she pulled the buggy 100 yards off the trail and stopped behind a live oak grove that would hide her from anyone passing by. She hobbled the horse, then scooped out a small fire pit and lined its perimeter with limestone rocks. She prepared a small supper, washing it down with boiled black coffee that left ground stuck in her teeth.
Oh, I wish I had a tent. It feels like rain.
She pulled up dry grass and made a crude mat on which to spread her blankets. She wrapped herself in them and listened to the sounds of the night.
Oh, Donnelly, I wish you were lying with me. I miss you so.
Though her husband presented a rough exterior to most people, she knew it was a defensive posture meant to gain advantage over those who might challenge him. Donnelly occasionally spoke roughly to her, too, but in the privacy of their bedroom, he had sometimes been tender and loving. She wished he could have been that way more often. She made good progress the next day. The rain didn't fall until late afternoon. The wind blew it in beneath the buggy's top. Wrapping a blanket around her shoulders in an effort to stay dry, Geneva began looking for shelter. She saw a low goat shed, but a couple of dozen goats were huddled beneath it. She didn't care to share the night with them. She was about to despair of finding a dry place when around dusk she spotted a house 200 yards from the trail. She found a dim wagon trace and turned onto it, winding past live oak trees and junipers. The house was plain, the sort of nailed-together box and strip structure common to this developing land. It once had a coat of paint, but now needed another. In back stood a barn, an open shed, and several pens built of upright live oak branches. Seeing no sign of anyone outside, she pulled up in front of the house.
Anybody home?
She thought for a minute that no one would answer, but the door opened slowly. A man peered out, showing only his face at first, then pulling the door all the way back.
Yes, ma'am. Let me help you down from there.
Friendly-eyed, he was approaching middle age. A bristly stubble darkened his face, for he had not shaved in 2 or 3 days.
I'd be obliged for a chance to get out of the rain.
You found it?
He raised both hands to support her as she climbed down from the buggy.
You go right on inside. I'll put away the horse and buggy while you move up close to the cook stove and get dry.
Geneva had not seen a woman, though there were curtains on the two front windows.
You sure your wife won't mind?
I'm a widower.
I'm sorry?
Geneva paused, considering the potential complications of being in the house with a man she never saw before. He seemed to read her thoughts.
Don't you worry, ma'am. I can see that you're a lady, and I've always tried to be a gentleman, even if I ain't had much training for it.
He lifted the tarp that covered her belongings.
You need me to bring any of this in?
Just the carpet bag.
The dampness had given her a chill. She spread the wet blanket across the backs of two wooden chairs and stood in front of the stove. She held her hands near the source of the heat. The man entered the house, casting off a woolen poncho from his shoulders.
Got your horse and buggy took care of. Are you getting all dried out?
Oh, I'm fine, Mr.
She hadn't heard his name.
Nathan. Just Nathan.
I'm Geneva Bannister.
She said it before she thought better. If Nathan had heard of Donley Bannister, he might put two and two together. She looked around the Spartan room. A cast-iron cook stove, a plain wooden table and four chairs, an open cabinet for kitchen utensils, and little else comprised the furnishings. A closed door indicated a bedroom, probably just large enough for a bed and perhaps a chest of drawers.
If I'd known a lady was coming, I'd have cleaned the place up a little. And shaved.
Everything looks fine, Mr. Nathan. The main thing is that it's warm and dry, and you were kind enough to let me in.
Well, it's getting late for you to go any farther. You're welcome to spend the night here.
Geneva involuntarily glanced toward the bedroom door.
Well, thank you, but there's a problem.
No problem at all. You'll have the bed, I'll sleep in the barn. I've got a cot out there for when company stops by.
Just the same, don't you think people might talk?
I've been hurt by horses and run over by a wagon, and I've been in a couple of foolish fistfights that didn't do me any good. But talk never hurt me. Besides, the only way anybody will find out is if you tell them. I won't.
You're a kind man, Mr. Nathan.
Just trying to remember my upbringing. I was about to start some supper when you came. I bet you're hungry.
I am. Show me where everything is, and I'll fix the supper.
It's a deal. I don't often get to eat a meal cooked by a woman.
She sensed that Nathan was a lonely man, living here by himself. The window curtains told her a woman once lived here, too. But they were faded and beginning to fray.
I saw a field out yonder and some cattle.
I've got the starting of a nice little ranch. It'll be bigger someday. Losing my wife took the heart out of me for a while. But I got myself back on the road now.
You need to find a good woman.
I suppose. But women like Martha don't come along often. Women willing to scrape by on a hard-scrabble place like this and take it on faith that things will get better.
Well, there may be more of them than you think. A lot of women would be glad to have a husband who's settled down, knowing every day where he is, knowing that come night he'll be home where he belongs.
Nathan was silent a while, deep in thought, perhaps reviewing old memories.
It always seems like the best ones have been taken already. I bet you're married.
Yes, I am.
Happy?
I suppose. What does happiness mean? It must be more than simply settling for occasional shining moments that never last long enough. The coffee has come to a boil, if you're ready for it.
After supper, she washed the plates and utensils in a large tin pan. Nathan dried them on a towel that once had been a flour sack and placed them on open shelves. It occurred to her that Donley rarely helped her in the kitchen. The dinner chores finished, they sat at the cleared table and talked. Actually, Nathan did most of the talking. He told of coming to Texas from Missouri after the war, bringing with him his childhood sweetheart, living on little more than beans and cornbread while he sharecropped cotton on worn-out ground. Gradually, he saved enough to buy a section of land here in the Concho River country. The couple had two children, but neither lived past the first year. Martha gradually pined away and died, just as their fortunes seemed at last to be on the rise. He asked questions, but Geneva was wary about telling too much, especially regarding her life with Donley. It had had its high points, but it also had its lows. Donley was reckless, ever ready to gamble on the long chance. She never knew if he was going to bring home a bag of silver or an empty sack. As sleepiness tugged at her eyelids, she looked toward the bedroom door, wondering if Nathan meant what he said about sleeping in the barn. True to his word, Nathan lighted a lantern and gathered up a couple of blankets.
There's a bar for the front door if that'll ease your mind, but I promise you won't need it.
I'm sure I'll be fine, Mr. Nathan.
She lit a lamp and carried it into the bedroom, which was small as she had expected. One window faced toward the barn. She blew out the lamp before she undressed. She lay awake a long time, thinking about Donnelly, wondering if he would really be pleased to see her despite sending her a message to stay put. She found herself comparing him to Nathan. Her impression of the rancher was that a promise made was a promise kept. He had probably never had as much money in his hands at one time as Donnelly occasionally did when he made a good trade on a string of horses, or when the cards favored him in a high-stakes game. Donnelly's trouble was that he could never hold on to it. It came easily and went the same way. Her last thoughts before sleep carried her away were of Nathan. She felt conflicted between gratitude he had not taken advantage of her and disappointment that he hadn't even tried. She had not barred the front door. Andy was pleased to see that Geneva Bannister's buggy remained on the trail toward Fort McCabot. He half expected her to go around, avoiding the town and any report that might find its way back to the Slocums. She probably also knew of the nearby ranger encampment. For whatever reason, though, she went into the little settlement. He saw her stop at a store. That would occupy her a while, he thought, time enough for him to steal a few minutes with Bethel. He should also report to Sergeant Riker, but that would take away from the little time he could be with his wife. Instead, he would send Riker a note. Nearing the door of his and Bethel's house, he couldn't contain his excitement.
Bethel, honey! I'm home!
As Andy dismounted, Bethel rushed to him, her skirt flaring, spooking the horse in the pack field. He had to make a quick grab for the reins.
Whoa, whoa there! No, not to scare a horse that way.
She threw her arms around him.
2 weeks gone and the first thing you do is fuss at me. Rush up and kiss me.
She was a little thing, the top of her head barely coming up to his top shirt button, but she had surprising strength when she embraced him.
Yeah, I haven't got long. I'm trailing a woman.
A woman?
Not one you need to worry about. She must be over 30 years old.
What do you want with an old woman?
We don't want her, we want her husband. Things work out, she'll lead me to him.
Well, if she's an old married woman, I guess it's all right. Come in the house.
I don't have much time.
She gave him a coquettish smile.
Then let's not waste it standing out here where all the neighbors can watch us.
She stopped in the doorway and waited while he tied the horse. The mule would stay close. Inside, she closed the door behind them and fell into his arms. By the time they came back outside, an hour or so later, the black horse stood hip-shot and appeared to be half asleep. The mule had strayed off a little way, grazing. Bethel clung to his arm as he walked toward the horse. Her face was flushed, her eyes shining. She squeezed his arm and smiled.
Mrs. Bannister could be pretty far along on the trail to Fort Concho. I stayed some longer than I intended to.
Do you wish you hadn't?
No, except that you keep making it harder and harder for me to leave.
All part of the plan. Maybe someday I'll convince you not to leave at all.
The way I feel right now, I could ride over to the ranger camp and tell Sergeant Riker that I'm quitting.
Why don't you?
Because despite what they say, newlyweds can't live on love alone.
I think we could, for a while.
Andy awakened at first light, wondering if he smelled like a goat. Unable to find another suitable shelter away from house and barn, he had made a cold camp beneath a low-roofed shed, sharing space with 20 or so spotted goats. He followed Geneva Bannister at a respectful distance and saw her turn the buggy toward a plain little ranch house. Hunched up beneath a yellow slicker, rain running off the brim of his hat, he watched her go inside. Shortly afterward, a man came out and took the horse and buggy to his shed. It was obvious she intended to spend the night there. Andy held little hope the man was Donnelly Bannister. It seemed unlikely that he would come back so soon and be this near to the scene of the shooting. But the ranger learned that fugitives could be unpredictable. He remembered one who robbed the same bank a second time within a week, dodging posses still out hunting him for the first offense. And he waited for darkness before riding closer. Leaving his horse and pack mule tied, he walked to a side window and cautiously looked inside. Geneva sat at a table in earnest conversation with a man wearing the plain clothes of a rancher or farmer. Andy didn't recognize him, but he knew this was not Donnelly Bannister. Perhaps he was kin of Geneva or Donnelly, or he might be simply a stranger with whom Geneva sought shelter on a rainy night. If that was the case, Andy thought, Donnelly had better be broad-minded about his wife. Even a tolerant man might scratch his head over this situation. There did not appear to be another woman in the house. Somewhat later, from beneath the goat shed, Andy saw the man carry blankets to the barn. He didn't return to the house. Though it was none of Andy's business one way or the other, he felt a measure of relief. Damp and chilled, Andy didn't sleep much. He kept thinking about Bethel. He had much rather have spent the night with her. Instead, he had to settle for the goats and the shed's accumulated odors. Next morning, the man milked a Jersey cow and carried the milk to the house. He set the bucket on the porch and knocked on the door. Geneva opened it, smiling. The man touched the brim of his hat in response. Smoke rose from the chimney, reminding Andy that after spending the night in a cold camp, he wasn't going to have breakfast for a while, if at all.
At least the rain stopped.
After an hour or so, the man ventured out and hooked Geneva's horse to the buggy. Andy kept low. He watched the man help Geneva up onto the seat, then take off his hat as she extended her hand to him, holding it for a long moment. She set off to rejoin the trail that would continue taking her toward the Conchos. Andy waited until she was 300 yards along before he caught up his animal and rode down to the house. He knew she would move far ahead of him, but he could catch up. The man was at the barn, saddling a horse. He looked up in surprise at Andy's approach.
Howdy. All of a sudden, I'm getting a lot of company. Something I can do for you?
You can tell me about the lady who just left here.
Well, Mrs. Bannister? Ain't much to tell. I never met her before yesterday evening. How come you to ask?
Andy showed his badge.
I'm a ranger. Name's Andy Picker.
And mine's just Nathan.
A worried look came into the man's eyes. He stopped saddling the horse.
Is she in trouble?
She's not, but her husband is. Did she tell you about him?
She called herself Mrs., so I knew she was married. I didn't think it was my place to ask personal questions. I did get a feeling that everything ain't just right.
Did she say where she was going?
No. I figured if she wanted me to know, she'd tell me. And she didn't. Look, Ranger, she struck me as being a real nice lady. I wouldn't want to see her hurt.
I wouldn't either, but I'm afraid that's already happened. There's not much me and you can do about it. You sure she didn't mention where she's headed?
She didn't. And to be truthful, I don't believe I'd tell you if she had. Like I said, she's a nice lady. I wouldn't want to add to whatever problem she's already got.
Andy sensed that Nathan had become infatuated with Geneva Bannister. He had suspected she had the same effect on Addison Giles and the liveryman Spence. He would bet that Nathan had not slept well last night, lying in the barn and thinking about the woman sleeping in his bed.
Maybe you'll feel different if I tell you the whole of it.
I don't know about that, but come on down to the house. I expect you haven't had any breakfast.
Nor much of a supper yesterday. I stayed all night under your goat shed.
I slept in the barn. You could have joined me.
Well, I didn't want to tip my hand too early.
Nathan fried bacon and eggs and listened without comment while Andy told him what he knew about the trouble between Donnelly Bannister and the Slocums. While Andy wolfed down the breakfast, Nathan shared his thoughts.
I know about the Slocums a little. They made a couple of sachets up into this country, carrying off cattle. Even stole sheep one time. Man's got to be low to steal sheep.
That's their reputation.
But if you're following Mrs. Bannister to try and find her husband, who can say that the Slocums ain't doing the same thing?
They tried at first. She got them decoyed away on a wild goose chase.
But she didn't shake you off.
Well, she almost did. She's a sharp lady.
But like you say, a lady.
Andy finished his eggs.
It'd be better for her and her husband if I find him and bring him back to stand trial. Talk around town is that no jury there would convict him. The only thing the folks blame him for is that he didn't kill the other Slocums, too. But if he doesn't come back and get cleared, he'll stay on the run and drag her along with him.
I didn't lie to you. All she said was that she still had a long ways to go. She didn't tell me where.
Clean out of Texas, maybe.
Maybe. She was headed north. There's a lot of country between here and the Canada line.
I doubt that the money counters in Austin would pay my expenses to go as far as Canada.
I wish I could go along and help you. I can see where it'd be a favor to her in the long run. But I've got my livestock to take care of and a crop that'll need weeding.
I started by myself. I'll go on by myself. But much obliged for the thought. I wish I could stay and get better acquainted.
She's got an hour or so start on you.
That buggy will leave deep tracks in the mud.
Putting his horse into an easy lope, Andy caught up. He held back just out of sight, occasionally moving close enough to be sure she'd not changed direction. A rider came along, heading south, leading four horses tied head to tail. Geneva stopped him. They talked for a minute, and he pointed northwestward. As the horseman approached him, Andy raised his hand in greeting.
Howdy. Trying to catch up to a lady in a buggy.
The rider hesitated. Andy pulled his jacket open to reveal his badge.
I met her. She wanted to be sure she was still on the right trail to Fort Concho. I told her she was.
Andy started to ride on.
Is the lady married?
I'm afraid she is.
Seems like the best ones always are. I guess I'll have to keep looking.
Good luck.
Andy put the horse back into a trot. The little pack mule followed as if it were tied to the horse's tail. Fort Concho stood at the confluence of three rivers. Its original mission had been to protect travelers from Indians on the San Antonio-El Paso Road. Now Indian hostilities had ended except for Apache raids far to the west. The fort seemed to be marking time, awaiting closure. It was still home to the 10th Cavalry Buffalo Soldiers, however, and was a vital source of revenue for the fledgling town of Santa Angela on the north bank of the Concho River. Though the citizens by and large had a strong prejudice against black soldiers, that prejudice did not extend to the money they spent. Because it was late afternoon, Andy felt it likely that Geneva would spend the night in town before traveling on. He discounted the possibility that she might meet Donnelly here. This was only 100 miles from the scene of the shooting. Every sheriff within 200 miles probably had his description. Andy's first move was to visit the post and dispatch a wire to headquarters. He wrote it in longhand.
I wish to report that I have arrived at Fort Concho.
He was surprised that the telegraph operator was black. He heard that most Buffalo soldiers were illiterate, a result of their upbringing in slavery. The trooper smiled as he read back the scribbling.
I wish to report that I have arrived at Fort Concho and keeping Mrs. Bannister in sight. No sign yet of her husband will follow unless ordered otherwise. Be all right with you if I correct the spelling?
Go ahead. I didn't know there was anything wrong with it. I should have studied when I was in school.
Do you want to wait and see if there's any answer?
I'll be back and check with you before I leave town.
Andy crossed the river and presented himself to the sheriff, as was customary. He briefly explained his mission. The sheriff, a middle-aged man of solid build, removed a smoking cigar from his mouth.
Need any help?
I believe I got it under control. Expect I'll be moving on in the morning.
Where are you staying, in case a message comes for you?
At the wagon yard. The only place cheaper is the riverbank. My horse and pack mule have earned some grain.
Andy remembered the yard from a previous visit. Looking over the animals in an outdoor pen, he recognized Geneva's buggy horse. He visited with the hostler while he unsaddled his black and removed the pack from the mule. Andy pointed toward the buggy horse.
Nice looking animal. Reckon it's for sale?
Well, not as I know of. It belongs to a lady who came in a while ago.
He nodded toward Geneva's buggy parked beside the barn.
Reckon where she's staying? I might decide to ask her about the horse.
I told her Mrs. Tankersley's hotel is a nice place.
Are you sure that's where she went?
I watched her all the way. Pretty women like that don't come in bunches.
Andy would like to rent a hotel room, too, but ranger budgets didn't provide for luxury. He would sleep on a cot in the wagon yard. At least that would be off the ground.
You may have a hard time sleeping tonight. The soldiers got paid today and they'll be noisy. It's a caution how quick they can drink up $13.
Even us rangers get paid more than that.
Andy immediately wished he hadn't spoken. He'd put his badge in his pocket, not intending to noise it around that he was a ranger.
Then you ain't really interested in that horse. You're interested in the woman. Did she kill somebody?
Well, she didn't do anything except maybe marry the wrong man. I'm hoping she'll lead me to him.
If you shoot him, she'll make a fine-looking widow. Every bachelor in the country will be after her, and some that ain't bachelors.
I don't figure to shoot him. I'm supposed to bring him in so a jury can find him innocent and turn him loose. Then he won't have to be on the run anymore.
If he's innocent, I don't see no reason to try him in the first place. It's a waste of the taxpayers' money, and I'm a taxpayer.
Naturally, it's wasteful. It's the government.
Andy walked down Chadbourne Street and found a cafe. He splurged on a two-bit meal. While he sat finishing his last cup of coffee, two black soldiers paused at the door and looked in. The proprietor gave them a threatening frown, and they moved on.
I'll be glad when they shut down the fort and all those dark-complected Ethiopes are gone.
Andy didn't speak his thoughts, but it seemed likely that some of the town might shut down when that happened. He remembered something old Preacher Webb told him years ago. The worst punishment God could inflict on the world would be to give people everything they wished for. Returning to the wagon yard, he took his blanket roll and spread it on a steel cot.
I hope you're not a smoker. Careless cowboy came near burning this place down a while back.
Andy settled onto the cot.
Yeah, man is entitled to only so many vices. I don't waste mine on tobacco.
Tired, Andy quickly dropped off to sleep. Sometime later, he was awakened by boisterous shouting and celebratory gunshots.
What the?
He raised up on one elbow, but could see little in the darkness. A lantern burning near the open barn door showed him nothing. He tried to settle back down to sleep, but the noise kept jarring him. Occasional shots continued to be fired. After one, he sensed that the tenor of the shouting changed.
Hell of a place to get any sleep.
He turned over for another try. He managed to doze off when somebody shook his shoulder.
Ranger, wake up. The sheriff says he needs you.
In the darkness, Andy couldn't see the young man's face.
What's the trouble?
Somebody shot one of them darky troopers, and now there's hell to pay. The soldiers are swarming across the river looking for the man that done it. If they don't find him, just about anybody else will do.
Andy pulled on his boots.
Where's the sheriff now?
At the jailhouse. He's locked up the man that pulled the trigger, but he may not be able to keep him. He needs all the help he can get.
Andy put on his holster belt.
Sure, the way I intended to spend the night, I wasn't planning on having to shoot anybody.
Well, you never know what you may have to do around here come payday.
Andy didn't count the soldiers who clustered in front of the jail. To do so would probably scare him. Many were armed with rifles and pistols. Others carried driftwood clubs picked up along the river. They shouted furiously at the sheriff and another man, evidently a deputy, standing in front of the door. The sheriff held a shotgun close to his chest. The deputy had a rifle. Andy saw a pathway open up between the members of the mob. He rushed through it, the young man following. Someone grabbed at him, but he jerked loose and joined the sheriff and deputy at the door. Soldiers grappled with the young man and prevented him from getting that far. The sheriff raised one hand, calling for quiet. It was slow in coming, but most of the shouting died down.
You soldiers, I'm calling on you to go back across the river. There's been killing done, but the man that did it's behind bars. He'll stand trial according to Texas law.
A soldier with sergeant stripes stood forward.
And get turned loose, like they always do?
That'll be up to a jury.
A white jury? You think they'd ever convict a white man for killing one of us?
I don't want to shoot anybody, but I would do it to protect my prisoner.
The crowd surged forward. The sheriff tried to swing the shotgun into line, but someone struck him on the head with a heavy club. He went down. Hard hit, the deputy went to his knees too. Andy reached for the sergeant, who had shouted loudest. He grabbed him by the collar as he pulled his pistol and shoved the muzzle against the man's neck.
Now y'all back away! I don't want to kill anybody, but I've got my finger on the trigger. If anybody jostles me, this pistol will go off.
All right! Don't nobody jostle him!
The troopers moved back a little. Andy found himself looking into the muzzles of a dozen or more guns, his heart hammered. Any one of them could kill him in an instant. He tried to hold his voice steady.
If anybody shoots me, I'll pull this trigger as I go down.
Andy found over the years that the ones who shouted the loudest were usually the first to cave in.
Back away! He'll blow my head clean off!
The troopers were still in a mood to fight, but their comrades' pleas stayed their hands.
Everybody ease back. No use in anybody else getting bloodied up. Payday's supposed to be a time to celebrate, not to get yourselves killed.
And you guarantee the prisoner will pay?
Andy knew the realities.
I guarantee he'll be tried. I can't promise you anything beyond that.
Then he'll go free. They always go free. A soldier's life ain't worth 6 bits in this town. Not if he's black.
Andy kept his grip on the sergeant's collar, but lowered the muzzle an inch. It appeared to him that the mob's anger had peaked. The men had had their confrontation, and several had had their say. Gradually, the crowd began fading back into the darkness. A few loitered a short distance away, watching, muttering empty threats.
I'm putting you in jail for tonight.
What for? All I done was talk.
Sometimes talking do more damage than a gun.
The rioters released the young man who summoned Andy. He knelt beside the sheriff.
Looks to me like he's out cold. Deputy don't look good either. Help me get them inside, then you better run and fetch a doctor. I'll lock the door.
The sergeant voluntarily helped carry the two lawmen into the jail and placed them on cell cots.
You really gonna lock me up?
That way your friends won't come back and burn the jailhouse down. You gotta realize that what y'all did here tonight was wrong.
As wrong as shooting a soldier in cold blood? We was just trying to get justice. There ain't no other way we'll see it around here.
Andy recognized the futility of arguing, for the sergeant was right.
I know. Maybe someday things will be different.
Someday. That's what they always tell us when they want us to stand back and be quiet. It'll be better someday.
I wish it was otherwise, but it isn't. Probably won't be till we've been dead and buried for 100 years.
Two men were locked in separate cells. One appeared to be a cowboy overloaded on whiskey. Andy assumed the other was the man who killed the soldier. After taking a sidearm from the sergeant, Andy pointed him into an empty cell.
For the record, what's your name?
Joshua Hamlin. Sergeant Joshua Hamlin. When you write it down in the book, don't forget the sergeant. I've been a long time getting that far.
Andy closed and locked the cell door. The sheriff stirred a little on his cot, moving his hands as if he were fighting. Blood had trickled down the side of his head and into his collar. Andy found a water pitcher and washpan. Using a wet towel, he wiped away as much blood as he could. It continued to ooze slowly. The deputy raised up and sat on the edge of his cot, holding his head with both hands. Andy inspected his wound.
Damn! What'd they hit me with, a sledgehammer?
He opened his eyes wide, evidently having trouble focusing.
They didn't get the prisoner, did they?
No, he's still safe in the cell. I'd like to go in there and stomp the clabber out of him for the trouble he's caused.
I'll do it myself when I get my feet under me. How's the sheriff? Saw him go down before I did.
He took a bad lick. I've sent for a doctor.
Andy unlocked the door and took the doctor toward the sheriff as the young man relocked the door to the jailhouse.
He took a mean blow to the head. Hasn't come around yet.
The doctor set his black bag on the floor beside the cot and bent over the mumbling lawman.
I'll see what I can do.
Andy wandered back for his first good look at the prisoner accused of the killing. The register showed his name to be Ephraim Burnsides. That seemed too high-sounding to be real. Probably made up, he thought. The culprit looked like a road tramp. Eyes defiant, he smelled of whiskey, but appeared cold sober. The prisoner regarded Andy with apprehension.
Who the hell are you?
A man who's trying awful hard not to come in there and beat out what little brains you got. You have any idea the hell you've stirred up?
I don't let no darky get uppity with me. He sassed me, so I shot him. Like any self-respecting white man would do. I don't see nothing wrong with that.
You got the sheriff and his deputy both hurt trying to protect you.
That's their job. That's what they get paid for.
The prisoner stood up and gripped the bars.
How long are they gonna keep me in here?
I got a good mind to turn you loose right now and set you on the street. Wonder how long it'd take for the soldiers to rip off both your arms and beat you to death with them.
Fear flickered in Burnside's eyes, then evaporated quickly. He knew as well as Andy did that such a thing could not be allowed to happen.
You're responsible for taking care of me.
Not me. I'm just passing through. The local law is responsible, and it's laying out yonder helpless on account of you.
He placed a hand on the cell door and the key in the lock.
Now, do you want me to turn you loose?
The prisoner retreated to the back of his cell.
Go to hell.
Andy walked over to check on the sheriff. The doctor's face was grim.
Neither man will be able to do much for a while. I understand you are a ranger.
I am.
Then you'll have to take over here, at least for now.
Man, but I've got another job to do.
The doctor shook his head.
Right now, this town is sitting on a ton of black powder. It's just waiting for a spark. For the moment, that is more important than your assignment, whatever it may be.
Andy saw his point, but he knew also that several roads led out of Santa Angela. He could only guess which one Geneva Bannister might select while he was tied up here, guarding a prisoner who didn't deserve all this attention. He nodded toward the young man.
What about him?
He's not an officer. He's the sheriff's nephew. I'm sorry, Ranger, but you have inherited the responsibility, like it or not.
Damn.
Andy was at a fork in the road. Both roads called to him, but it was painfully clear which was the most urgent.
Yeah, you're right. I've got no choice but to stay.
From time to time during the night, Andy stepped outside to look and listen. The town had gone quiet, deceptively peaceful. He sensed that it slept fitfully at best. Sleepy-eyed, Andy watched the first bright rays of sunshine break in the east and hoped the long, dark hours had cooled tempers on both sides of the river. He unlocked the cowboy's cell.
You got some place to go?
Back to the ranch. Done spent all my money.
Then you better get started. If the trouble comes back, you don't want to be caught in the middle of it.
Much obliged. I was in a cold sweat last night thinking they might bust in here and not know which one of us to lynch.
The cowboy picked up his belongings and went to the door, but paused.
I don't reckon you could lend me five.
Get before I change my mind.
Next time I may take my business to a different town.
The cowboy disappeared down the street. The sheriff struggled to his feet to relieve himself. He seemed disoriented, lost. The deputy was more stable.
Oh, this is the worst headache I ever had. I'm seeing double. I hope you'll stay a while, Ranger. I couldn't blow a hole in the wall with a double-barrel shotgun, and the sheriff's worse off than I am.
I don't see where I've got a choice. I'll stay as long as I'm needed.
He badly wanted to go to the wagon yard and watch for Geneva to move, but he dared not leave the jail while the prisoner remained in it. At mid-morning, an attorney showed up, wearing a black swallowtail coat and an officious expression.
I have here a court order for the release of Ephraim Burnsides.
Andy expected this. His opinion about most criminal lawyers was that they were well-named.
I see. Unfortunately, the sheriff's incapacitated and unable to acknowledge the order. You have to wait till he's in better shape. That may be a couple of days.
What is your capacity here?
I'm a Texas Ranger, passing through on an assignment. I've got no authority to let your man go.
On the contrary, because you seem to be the only officer here in possession of his faculties, I contend that you do have the authority. I demand that you release Mr. Burnsides, otherwise I shall have no choice but to bring the judge and force you into compliance.
Andy's stomach soured at the prospect of releasing the prisoner.
His life will be dirt cheap once he walks out into the street.
It is the responsibility of the law to protect him.
The local law? Look at him. They're in no shape to help anybody.
There should be no problem from the soldiers. The commanding officer has ordered all military personnel restricted to the post.
Let me see your warrant.
The paper showed that bail had been paid in the amount of $100.
That's not much of a price to place on a soldier's life.
A black soldier. From time to time, those people have to be reminded of their proper place.
Grudgingly, Andy signed the release order. Then he fumbled through two rings of keys before he found one that fitted the lock. Burnsides showed no gratitude.
Good thing you didn't hit me last night, Ranger. You'd be taking my place in that cell.
Get out of here before I hit you anyway. I was in the middle of a job and you've probably blown it to hell. And you, counselor, you better collect your fee right now. If your client has got any sense, he'll clear out of town and never come back.
But that would forfeit his bail.
$100? That's not much of a price to put on a life, white man or black. In fact, in his case, it may be too much. Half that would be about right.
I need a drink. A bunch of drinks.
He jerked his head and the lawyer followed him out of the office. Andy felt emptiness watching Burnsides walk out into the open sunshine. As the rioters predicted, he was escaping justice. It was a foregone conclusion that even if he went to trial, a white jury would acquit him. It was the tenor of the times. Handy approached the black sergeant's cell.
You think you've simmered down enough that I can afford to let you go?
Hamlin looked toward Burnside's cage.
You turned him loose.
Well, I had to. His lawyer served me with a court order. But he'll stand trial.
Oh, he'll go free like they always do.
I can't argue with that. But I'm offering you a chance to leave if you want to take it. Or you can stay in here.
That cot is way too hard for my aching bones. I'll go.
The soldier picked up his belongings, which amounted mainly to $11, a large pocket knife, and the army pistol.
Where'd you come from, Sergeant?
Mississippi. I was born a slave, but we got emancipated when I was still too young to move cotton bales. By and by, the army come along looking for some of us to be soldiers. Said it was our chance to be somebody.
His face twisted.
Being somebody don't mean some low-down white trash can't kill us anytime they take the notion.
Now you best head straight to the post. I'd hate to see you back in here.
I'd hate to be back in here.
The sheriff was asleep again, his head wrapped in a white bandage. The deputy sat in a horsehide chair, eyes pinched in pain.
Since we don't have a prisoner to worry about, I need to walk over to the wagon yard and check up on things.
Take your time. We ain't going nowhere.
As Andy had feared, Geneva had left town soon after daylight. The hostler offered no information about the direction she took. She could have chosen the west, which would take her to the Pecos River and beyond, but she might run into Apache trouble there. She could have gone east toward Fort Worth, or she could have traveled northward toward the cross timbers and the rolling plains. He decided to take his horse out a while and try to pick up her tracks. At least when he left here, he might have some inkling about her direction. He picked the western road, traveling it for a time without seeing tracks he could be sure were left by the buggy. He circled around to the north road. Again, if her tracks had been there, later travelers had obliterated them. He had no more success on the trail east. He started westward, back toward town, frustrated. He would have to stop at Fort Concho and send a wire to headquarters. He hoped his superiors would understand that the situation in town had spiraled out of his control. At the edge of town, he saw a horseman moving toward him at a steady lope. Andy discerned that he wore a soldier's uniform. Close up, he recognized the sergeant who had spent the night in jail. Hamlin rode a conventional stock saddle, not army issue. His brown horse had a brand, but it was not the Army's U.S., Andy thought it likely the mount was stolen.
Hold up a minute! Well, I thought you were going back to the fort!
Without replying, Hamlin moved past and galloped eastward. Andy started to follow, challenge him again, but decided against it. If the sergeant was deserting, that was the Army's business. Andy had trouble enough on his hands trying to keep up with Geneva Bannister. Andy rode first to the post to send the wire. The same black soldier read Andy's message with a quizzical look in his eyes.
Still want me to fix the spelling?
Suit yourself. They pay me for riding, not writing.
The telegrapher tapped out the message on his key.
Aren't you ever gonna let Sergeant Hamlin out of jail?
I turned him loose several hours ago.
He's never reported back in. Some of the boys are afraid he's in trouble in that hog wall across the river. Come dark, they may go looking for him.
They'll have to look farther than Santa Angela. I saw him a while ago, riding like the devil was on his tail.
The telegrapher registered surprise.
It's not like Sarge to desert. You sure there wasn't somebody after him?
Nothing was chasing him but his shadow, and it was having a hard time keeping up.
The hostler met Andy as he dismounted at the stable door.
I'm glad you got back. There's big trouble down the street.
Andy had seen no commotion at the fort.
In trouble?
That Burnside's the one who shot the trooper yesterday. He got in a quarrel with the black soldier. Don't know who drawed first, but Burnside's took a bullet square in the brisket.
Kill him?
He never took another breath.
Sergeant Hamlin.
Andy remounted and rode down the street at a run. Andy found a small crowd clustered around a body on the sidewalk. The deputy was there, his head bandaged from the previous night's ruckus. He looked up at Andy and nodded painfully.
Glad to see you, Ranger. Got a messy situation here.
So I heard.
People say a soldier came up on him and started calling them names. Burnside's drew a gun, but he was drunk and missed. Soldier was sober and hit what he aimed at. He grabbed a horse from a hitching post, took to the Tules.
It was Sergeant Hamlin, the one we had in jail.
How do you know?
Because I met him on the east road. He was cutting a hole in the wind.
Why didn't you stop him?
I didn't know about this. Chasing deserters is the Army's job.
It's my job now.
The deputy looked anxiously at the men in the crowd.
I need a posse.
You sure you're fit to ride?
No, but I'm better off than the sheriff is. I'll wire the peace officers around us to be on the lookout, and I'll take some men and hit the trail.
In that case, I'll be getting on about my business if it's not too late.
Andy doubted that the deputy's posse would catch Hamlin. More than likely, officers in another county miles away would intercept him. Meanwhile, innocent blacks were likely to suffer the painful consequences of mistaken identity.